Welcome to The Rough Puffs. I'm your host, Andrea Bennett.
And I'm Kim Fu. This is a podcast where we rewatch and discuss The Great British Bake Off. We're up to Series 5, Episode 10, the finale.
Do you know how long I spent coming up with titles for this episode only to realize that we call every single one the finale with special guest, in this case, Emily Davidson?
I was thinking the Battle of the Windmills before I remembered that as well.
Yeah, the signature is two different types of viennoiserie. So a pain au chocolat or a croissant or a milk bun or whatever Richard calls his pain au lait.
Yeah, so basically a enriched dough or a laminated dough. Like that seems like what it boils down to. A Danish or a bun.
Yeah, that you would like eat for breakfast in France, mm-hmm. really is the, yeah, as opposed to like pâtisserie shop where you get your fancy dessert pâtisseries. The viennoiserie is the breakfast pastry, the intro pastry for the day.
Yeah, they have 3.5 hours. Nancy mentions that she often makes croissants around Christmas. And Mel says, how do you have time to make croissants around Christmas? And she says, well, now I can make them in 3.5 hours, so it's not a problem. Yeah. Because, you know, drawing attention to the fact that it is unreasonable what they're being asked to do.
It is totally unreasonable. And Nancy's funny. She's cheeky. I like her cheek. She's had cheek from day one. Mary says the pressure's on for this one. Paul says, you know, his usual thing, that he's been making viennoiserie since he was 3.5 years old and he's made 87 bajillion of them and he's expecting a level of perfection that only comes after you've mastered viennoiserie.
How old is Paul? Because he says that this has been part of his professional career for 30 years. And I was like, I thought we were pretending you were younger than that.
Paul Hollywood age. Sorry, Paul Hollywood. You know, you're a little bit vain. He's 56 now.
I thought he was like 56 at the time of this season.
Yeah, I would have guessed that, but he's sort of a Silver Fox, I suppose. Like, he must have gone gray young.
I didn't think Silver Fox meant that you went gray young. I thought it meant that it looked good on you.
Yeah, no, I mean, it would be weird to picture him with, like, actually, like, brown hair or something.
Now I want to Google that, like, Paul Hollywood young. Like, what did he look like?
Is episode 10 the episode where we just Google everything?
Oh, man, even, like, the pictures of him that are very young, he has gray hair. Or, like, you like salt and pepper hair where he looks extremely young.
Huh. I only recently started getting grays, and I'm, 37.
Really? I have so much gray hair.
Do you dye it, or is it just sort of hidden in your beautiful, luscious mane?
I don't dye it yet, but I probably will, like, fairly soon. Like, I have, like, big chunks and streaks. Like, whoever cuts my hair always draws attention to it.
I have a little bit at my, like, temples is mostly where it shows up. I like gray hair. Anyway, back to pastry. So, Louis, this episode for his signature, makes something called a chausson. It's a laminated dough that it starts off in a square and he sort of cuts and folds over. I've seen this technique. I've never done it myself, but it looks cool. With apple, walnut, raisin, and Cheshire cheese, which again sounds like a nice combination. And then he makes a pain au chocolat blanc, which he calls a pain au white chocolate with raspberries and cream cheese.
Pain au white chocolate. So the place that I go to get croissants and croissant-like things, right? They have some wacky ones, like they have like a s'mores one, and they have one that's very similar to one of Louis's, like it's a raspberry cheesecake one. Mm. I buy those if I'm buying a big box for a group. Like if I'm bringing a big box of them to a party, I will get like one of each of the wacky ones. But I would never get these for myself. Like for myself, it's very much like just pain au chocolat or it's like a pear tart. I go for the super basics myself. And I feel like the Louis kind of, there's a million things in it. And one of them is cream cheese. It's like fundamentally not my jam. Like you don't want more than one bite of that, I think.
Yeah, it wouldn't be my choice either. I like a regular pain au chocolat. So like reinventing the wheel there is not really something I'm interested in. Louis throws in raspberries. And for Nancy, she uses freeze-dried fruit in hers. And so Louis runs into the problem where his raspberries sog into his dough. So it's wet there. And then the cream cheese is quote-unquote chalky.
What's interesting, though, is that Paul points out the soggy bit under the raspberries. But he says the pastry overall is too dry. The chalkiness of the fillings, like, you know, already a dry pastry is like unappealing. Like he thinks it fails on a flavor level. The judges like the other one, though. They like the apple, walnut, raisin, cheese one. Chausson. Which, again, to me is still too much. Also, is that not the word for slipper?
It is. Yeah, you're right. It is the word for chausson. Like ciabatta.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Okay.
They should do a technique or like a signature where you just have to make some kind of slipper bake.
Since apparently every culture has one. Okay.
Yeah.
We can turn to Nancy since you mentioned it and her freeze-dried raspberry solution. So her raspberry one is a raspberry almond croissant. She had some issues with the proofing, apparently. So it's like collapsed a little bit and gone a little bit doughy. But it did seem like as Paul was saying that, he was straining to criticize a little bit. It didn't seem like it was an obvious flaw. He was like, it's maybe collapsed a little, it's maybe a little doughy. You know, that was his energy.
I feel like if you got Nancy's at the bakery, you'd be pretty excited. Like, it'd be tasty. It would fulfill one's idea of a croissant. I don't think the judges are leaving her table thinking like, womp, womp, what a failure. Yeah.
Something similar happened with the other one too, the apple and lemon kites, where Paul thought it was a little bit too thin and Mary was like, I'm not that worried about it, about the size. Like, it tastes great. She's like, you know, I guess you could have a few more layers. Like, that would have made it better, but whatever. Like, I would say they left the table being like, we're straining to criticize you a little bit.
I thought apple and lemon, in some ways, it's a super basic flavor combination. In other ways, like, I would not have combined. I don't generally combine apple and lemon and stuff, unless it's like a little bit of, like, just a tiny bit of lemon for acidity, but I wouldn't call that an apple and lemon whatever. If you saw apple and lemon kite on the patisserie list, would you take it home?
That one I would. I feel like there was a lot about that one that was sort of strange and intriguing, right? Like the fact that the apples are skin on too, like, and that they're kind of raw looking. Like it does seem like it's not what you think. Like it's not like every other apple Danish kind of thing you've ever had. And that makes me curious about it.
And then Richard makes pain au lait, which is, milk bread. And then he makes a pain au chocolat with chocolate. Or candied pear, sorry. The thing with the pain au lait is it's got that sort of like Norman curse of being a very simple, basic bake. And so Paul says it has to be absolutely perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know how that goes when Paul says that.
His buns are touching each other. So there's like obvious splits once they're split. I would say the much bigger problem happens with his laminated dough, with his pear pain au chocolat. Okay, so basically Richard decides very early that this cannot be done in this amount of time without some tricks, basically, right? That you need to come up with a way to make a laminated dough in such a small amount of time. So he creams his butter and spreads it out instead of having like, you know, big honking layers of butter as one would. And, you know, Paul says, I'm worried it's going to be too bready. And then the other thing that happens is he puts it in the proving drawer to speed up the proving, even though it's like, you know, it's a warm drawer, which probably you shouldn't do with like layers of butter in a laminated dough.
No.
So there's like not enough butter in there to begin with, right? Because it's got all this air from the whipping. And then what butter there is runs out. And so during that like glamour shot montage where they pan over all the bakes and they show his
puffy chocolate roll.
Yeah, it's like it just looks like bread. Like that is not good.
No, it's awful. Yeah, okay, I have two pieces of feedback. And the first one is about the pain au lait. And my feedback is that I don't care if it looks like a batch bake at all. I like that little like part that was touching the other bread. You get more innard on the outside. And I feel like it's a really nitpicky for no good reason criticism. So I don't support that criticism. But I feel like if I get a buttery roll that had chocolate in it, and I was expecting a buttery roll that had chocolate in it, I would think, okay, yum. But if I'm expecting a pan au chocolat and someone gives me a bread roll, I'm going to be like deeply, deeply upset. And at this point in the series, he knows that cold butter is for pastry and room temperature softened butter is for cakes and cookies and bread. So it's just like a really novice, like noob move that I don't really understand why Richard of all people made that particular mistake. Paul says it's a shame.
He's very upset about the batch bake thing. Like, he's, like, angry about the batch bake thing.
Yeah, he is. As Mary's standing there, like, ugh.
I do think they were kind of bad choices, though, ultimately. Like, why did he make two different doughs and then make such simple things with them? Like, there was no need to do that. Just pick one and do it properly.
Yeah.
And then you did have enough time because Nancy and Louie did it, right? Nancy and Louie made, like, conventional lemon dough. They just stuck it in the freezer and it worked fine.
Yeah.
It's obviously possible, and no one was making you make two kinds of dough and then, you know, and then not have time to do anything interesting with them.
He should have just leaned into doing two enriched doughs. And going into the technical, it feels like, well, it feels like Nancy has a bit of the edge.
Mm-hmm.
And then Louis is just a bit behind her, and then Richard kind of needs to catch up.
Yeah. I would say Richard feels way behind already. And then the technical does not help him. So the technical is that they have to make 12 mini Victoria sandwiches, 12 mini tarte au citron, and 12 scones. And in 2 hours. And they don't have recipes.
Such a tight timeline. When they initially laid this technical challenge out, it wasn't until a little bit into the segment that I realized they got the ingredient list for each one. I thought they just had to, like, totally do it out of their heads. And at that point, it was like, oh, I can't. I wouldn't be able to do that. There are very few baking recipes I have memorized like that.
Mm-hmm.
But if I had the ingredient list in front of me, I feel like I could do this. And I feel like you probably could, too.
You could do this exact challenge?
2 hours is real tight. No, I mean, if I had 4 hours, I could do. I've never trained myself to be fast for the purposes of doing this kind of thing, because I don't want to be fast. It's my hobby time. And so I do it often purposefully slowly. So 2 hours would fuck me over.
With no instructions, I absolutely could not do this, even if I had 2 days. I don't know how to make a scone. And even like the filling of the tarts, like as an example, Nancy and Louie did it differently. And Richard did it wildly differently. Like Louie heated up everything on the stove together. Like he heated up the filling before he put it in the tart shell.
Yeah.
And then Nancy heated up just the cream before adding it to the other ingredients cold before putting the whole thing in this tart shell. And then Richard just mixed everything together and chucked it in the tart shell. And then his turned into first, it seemed like kind of an eggy souffle, and then into just like sweet scrambled eggs, split, ruined.
Yeah.
But yeah, they all did it differently. And I feel like I would have no idea which, you know, what to do. I think I could make the Victoria sandwiches. Like I can make jam and cream and basic cakes, but that's it. Like with no instructions, I think that's as far as I would go. And a tart shell. I could make a tart shell.
Scones are pretty easy. The tart shell, I would have done the tart the same way Lewis does, where you blind bake the shell and then basically like make a lemon curd and then just bake it off a little bit in the shell. That's the way I did that mango curd tart earlier in the... But I have... You're right. Like when that episode occurred, it shocked me the extent to which people were putting like pretty loose raw fillings into their pie, whereas it feels like much safer to me to do a lot of that work on the stove for a curd-based tart and then just finish it off in the oven. The thing that is the most there are lots of things that are very hard about the challenge. Like the 2 hour time constraint is intense. The other thing that's really annoying is that other than the scones, you could just make a big tarte au citron and a big Victoria sponge cake and cut it in slices.
You always harp on this. Sometimes you want little things. Like if you had a dinner where you're like handing it out to different tables, right? That kind of like if you were catering, you would want mini tarts, right? You would want mini cakes.
It's so annoying because you have to then fit 12 tart shells in, and it's so fiddly to fit the tart shells in. Whereas if you were doing a big tart, you can roll it thin and get it in there. Just the one time.
I will say, okay, I actually think the cakes, it's not that much harder to make mini cakes than to make a big cake. And it would cook faster. Like I could see the utility in doing that. Like I can see when I would choose to make little sandwich cakes over one big one. I also it's just cuter. Like sometimes you want things to be cute.
Never. Not in this household.
And the tarts too, actually. Like, it would cook faster. I get it. I think I get why I would do this.
It looks nice on a platter. About the Victoria sponge, even if I was asked to make 12 mini Victoria sandwiches, I might just bake like a big rectangle and use like a ring mold or cake cutter to like cut them out anyway. I may not bake them in their little thingies.
I think the edges would look crumbly and not as nice that way, personally, than as opposed to making them in the cupcake mold. And again, I think that they would cook faster and they'd have little domes.
They did have little domes. We should test this out sometime. A coworker of mine made the Milk Bar naked cake this weekend. And that involves baking a sheet and then using a cake ring to cut out the sizes. And then you use the scraps and mush them together with milk. And so I don't know. I may try this cake at some point in time. Mm. Oh, the way you get it. I think that the way that you get around the crummy part, which wouldn't work in the context of this challenge, is that you freeze the little bits that you've cut out before you do any icing or anything so that they don't crumble. So they kind of hold together.
Oh, so like if you're icing over the whole thing, okay. But in this scenario,
no, the naked cake, you leave it bare on the outside, so it's just icing between the layers, and you build it. Have you seen naked cake?
No.
Okay, I'll send you. I'll put a link in the chat.
I can't understand how you could stamp out a cake and it not be crumbly at the edges. Like, what are you using to stamp it out?
There are specific cake mold things, or cake ring, I think they're called, cake rings. I've never done it, so it might be frustrating as hell. Okay, it's in the chat.
See, I think that looks super messy. I think it looks super messy and crumbly at the edges. It looks the way I thought it would, and I think that that's not a good look.
People like it. People think it looks modern. That's what cakes look like these days.
It looks ugly. It looks stamped out in a way that is ugly. Okay. Where to me, it's like a complete bake all the way around looks finished. It looks like care went into it.
Can I send you a picture of the, also a link, can I send you a link of the, of a picture, link to a picture that I, of a cake that I baked this weekend?
Is your cake also stamped out? Is that why you're asking? Why you're showing it to me?
No, I'm just sharing my cake.
It's not relevant to this point in the conversation.
No, I mean, I just also baked a cake. I did want to mention that I use, because you got me a Tortenschneider, mm-hmm. which I don't know exactly what that means in German. I know that Torten probably means cake. Anyway, I've been calling it a cake beheader, and I use it to behead my first cake. I made a sprinkle cake that was a vanilla base and then just covered in sprinkles. And it looked like cake, you know? Like the cake that you drew when you were a child for birthday cakes, kind of.
Yes, and that cake is iced all the way around.
Yeah, but okay. So see, when I saw my coworker's cake on the weekend, I was like, oh, ours is so modern and fancy, and mine is very staid and like boring. Like I've become the Norman.
I think a stamped out cake looks unfinished. Okay, I have an example. So I have a leather backpack that is actual leather. It's like a modern silhouette where it's very, very square. But the reason why it's square is because the leather is like unhemmed. Like it's like unfinished functionally. I really liked it when I bought it because it's like such a modern silhouette, right? Like it's not rounded the way like leather is typically rounded because of the way the seams work, right? But the longer I have it, the more I think it's like, it just looks unfinished, actually. It doesn't, like when you say it's like, oh, it's such straight lines. It's so, why is modernity like, we didn't finish it. We stopped icing halfway through. We didn't hem the leather pieces. Like, I don't know. I don't think this is going to be something we like aesthetically in the long run.
I guess I'll have to check back in 10 years. I have an idea in my head because generally GBBO starts out, episode one is cake week, and I have a cake in mind, and I was going to adapt the recipe to, so that it became a naked cake, but after this conversation, I don't know if I will.
Maybe it's just me. I don't know. I have had this thought before. I, in general, don't like naked cakes. I really, really don't like stamped out naked cakes. I think that looks terrible.
Oh, so doing it as a naked cake but not stamping it out would be less offensive to your sensibilities.
I think that's hard to do well. I think having a cake that is traditionally completely iced and then leaving it, like, leaving the sides bare. I think it's hard to make that look nice, but possible. I think a stamped out cake will never look nice. Like, the most skilled baker, the Momofuku version, you know, it still looks ugly to me.
Okay.
So, the technical.
All right. So, in the end, Richard struggles with time management. Lewis is, you know, he's okay as an overcooked tart au citron. He has no piping on his tart au citron. They want them to pipe in chocolate tart au citron, whereas Nancy writes hers out and it looks nice. And Richard tries to write his out and they make fun of him because it says colon, not citron.
Louis and Richard both don't do that well, I would say. I would say Louis kind of has problems with all three, and Richard has just, like, abysmal tarts. Like Louis has, like, minor problems with all three. Richard has, like, wildly unacceptable tarts. And then Nancy, I would say, like, aces all of them. Like, it's just, like, one minor aesthetic thing. So it's, like, not a surprise that Nancy is first, but I think, like, Louis himself is very surprised that Richard is last. Like, he thinks it could have gone either way, and he actually would have put himself last.
I wouldn't have put him last.
Richard's tarts were just that bad, is sort of like the way it shook out.
You can't serve scrambled egg tart. I don't know. All of Lewis's was edible. The same cannot be said of Richard. Mm-hmm. So this week, instead of having an Andrea's Baking Corner, we will be having a guest join us, and that guest will be Emily Davidson. Thank you so much for joining us, Emily. Emily Davidson is a writer and baking show enthusiast living on the unceded traditional territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations in Vancouver, BC. She loves watching people make complicated and fancy food while eating eggs on toast. Her poetry collection, Lift, is available from Thistledown Press, and Emily is also a very good friend of mine. Thanks again for joining us, Emily.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
This is a segment where we grill you about your technical knowledge about all of the bakes that were completed in the entire season.
Well, this will go well because I had to skip the middle in my rewatch because I started to run out of time. So I watched the first, and then I got to the, like, semifinal and final last night.
When did you first watch this season? Because you called it a rewatch.
It is a rewatch. I was trying to remember. I was actually scrolling through my own tweets, which is always a good look, trying to see if I had noted. Because I think I started into GBBO in the same era where I discovered Broadchurch and watched all three seasons in the span of a very short amount of time, probably to an unhealthy extent. So I'm thinking maybe fall of 2018. And in the grand tradition of CBC Gem, they had, I want to say, season 4 onwards. So I think season 4 was maybe my first. So season 5 would have been my second season I had ever watched. So it's been a long time since I've gone on to watch everything they've ever done, as well as Canada. So I did have familiarity as I was rewatching. I was like, oh yeah, so-and-so. So it was a recap, but there were complete bits I had totally forgotten. I'd forgotten this was the season Nancy calls Paul the male judge, which is just one of my favorite moments in all British Bake Off history. I think it's a great thing. So yeah, so it's been a while.
What defined your GBBO Broadchurch era? Like, what draws you to those shows?
I want to say, I have it associated with a heavy season in life. And do you know those, either something with work was wrong or I was in a funk. And so you kind of distinctly remember the TV you were drawn to in those seasons, the coping mechanism television. And so for whatever reason in that season, it was English murders in the countryside and baking in a tent. So
makes sense to me.
No murders happen in the tent, thankfully.
Literal murders. Yeah, no.
Although in the finale, you know, Richard, he goes all citron on that tart.
He has such a full meltdown. Poor Richard.
Murders occurred. But who's your favorite? Do you have a favorite in this season? Or is there someone you're, like, rooting for? And conversely, is there someone who you would have tossed out of the tent as quickly as possible?
I was fairly strongly Team Louis this whole season. So I think his artistry appealed to me, and he also just seemed like kind of a lovely human being. I often end up rooting for the like, oh, would hang out with this person. They cut to his like ukulele club in the finale, and you're just like, yeah, he plays a ukulele, of course he does. And I think listening to some of your earlier thoughts, I would also have to throw Jordan probably to the curb, if I have his name correct. He also irritated me in ways that I don't feel proud of, but bless his cotton socks. I found him annoying. And so I was not sad when he made an early-ish exit. I hope he never hears this. You're the best, Jordan. Love you.
As you texted me while you were doing a rewatch, I think maybe only one time about the rewatch specifically, and it was as we reached the Baked Alaska Gate. I guess I'm curious, did the rewatch bring up any of the feelings from the time in 2018 that you watched the season, A, and B, how did you feel as the train barreled towards that high tension moment you knew was coming?
I would say the rewatch was a nice reclaiming. I did not feel a resurgence of whatever I was going through in 2018 that drew me to lots of baking shows. So in that sense, I felt quite free. I will be honest and say I could not actually watch the Baked Alaska moment. I had to do like a self-edit of, oh, it's coming, okay, and we're at the judging. I could watch Ian deliver his trash can, but I couldn't watch Diana totally assault him with her freezer. I had to bypass it. I was like, this is too much. This is not why I watch this show. We do not come here for the drama. We come here for the bakes. We being me mainly. So I'll admit that I didn't actually lay eyes on it a second time. It was too much for me.
That's fair. I think that Diana is my least favorite person on this series, even as I feel like that's slightly unfair of me.
Well, I can add a hot take because I feel similarly about Norman, who I know is quite beloved in this particular group. I know, I'm so, shots fired. The thing for me and Norman, I like him a lot, but he was told multiple times to up his game and he just continued to do his one thing. And perhaps he only had the one thing, which I can respect, but perhaps he was a mistaken cast in that sense. Because I just was like, they're telling you to be fancier, Norman. And he's like, here's a single flavor biscuit. Here is a random pie. And you're like, come on, buddy. I know you're from the like Outer Hebrides or whatever, but.
He kept claiming things were fancy that weren't, right? He'd be like, powdered sugar, that's fancy. Little bit of lemon, that's fancy, isn't it?
Pesto, yeah, and I respect it. Like, I remember the day I met hummus, and I was like, this is a fancy food. But you have to know the show, I think. By season 5, I don't know if you have an excuse for not rocking up with your best skills. So I like Norman as a human, but I was annoyed with the way that he participated.
Totally fair. Is there a baker you see yourself as most similar to? And is it different than your answers to the other questions?
I would say I aspire to be a Kate, and correct me if I'm getting any names wrong because I'm a little bad with names, but I'm probably a little bit more of a Martha. I would be trying to get along with everyone. Does anyone cry this season? I would also definitely be a crier from stress.
Oh yeah. Everybody cries.
Everybody cries. I would say like Martha holds it in until the, like, I think Martha only cries 2 times, and in her shoes, especially being 17, I would have cried, like, 100 times more than she does.
Oh, yes. I would have folded much earlier than she folds, for sure.
I cried while making dinner today. Just as a regular part of a Monday.
The ingredient, I would say. It's in the recipe.
I didn't cry into the, I didn't cry into the dinner.
I have cried into a dinner. That has definitely happened.
Absolutely.
What about Kate do you aspire to be like?
I really like her chutzpah, if I can use that word. Like, I feel like Kate has a little bit of tenacity in life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think how they show her life of her single momness and furniture restoring. And I'm just like, I think Kate's living her best life in a way that I really appreciate as a viewer.
Yeah, she's very reserved, so it always takes me a minute to warm up to her, but I do really appreciate her bakes. And there was, I muted myself earlier when you guys were talking about Norman because my kid was saying stuff. I don't even know because I'm wearing noise-canceling headphones. He tried to make something, like, somewhat fancy on the episode that he got sent home, right? Or maybe not. He made something that was really weird. Oh, he put lavender in something in his Pifel Tower. So he didn't have great luck trying something outside of his comfort zone either.
But lavender is not that creative either, right? I mean, even his biggest swings weren't that big. It does feel like something he should have been able to handle and not have seen as like quite that exotic.
He had a great accent and very good naval ship maritime signs, his signing skills.
He made for good TV, I will say. Do you have show recommendations for our listeners, Emily, of other shows that sort of scratch the same itch?
Oh, I am a huge fan of the Canadian show Blown Away, which is The Glassblowers. Andrea and I attempted it, and it may have been too tense for Andrea's sensibilities. There are a lot of glass-shattering moments, but I find the art of glassblowing is totally bonkers, and I would not have the patience for it, so I really enjoy that. And I have recently, this would be a recommendation more for folks with children, I think, although I had a good time. I watched all of Is It Cake in like a week, which is a recent Netflix edition. And for most of the time, I could tell where the cake was, but somehow watching a man yell about it with a knife was still like really satisfying for where I was at. So those would be my recos in a similar vein. If GBBO floats your boat, they would be likely contenders.
Perfect recos. Do you have any final thoughts for us about the season, baking, anything really?
I'm trying to think. I have a whole book of notes. I prepared very fastidiously for this just in case. I would like to say that Paul in this episode says things need to be perfect like three or four times. It's like, we know, Paul, it's a baking competition and it's the final. It's like, things need to be perfect. It's like, really? Are you just arriving? I would also just like to say I believe Louis has passed since the filming of the show, so watching this season was really interesting the second time, and I just was thinking of his family a lot, so major warm thoughts towards them. The technical seemed mean, the like do 36 of your favorite classics. I was like, is this a technical or is this just ritual hazing? I am unsure.
That's so interesting because I felt that way for a lot of technicals this season. Like listening back to the episodes and editing, I feel like I had to listen to myself say over and over again, like this technical is stupid. This technical is mean. And I actually liked this technical in the final. I felt like for once it was skills that they should have had, right? When they were like, they should know these the back of their hand. I was like, yeah, that's fair. And I feel like, okay, I feel like the test was, do you know how to order what you have to do? Do you know how to dovetail these tasks? Like, and that, I don't know, I feel like it was like testing both the skills of making those things and then also their ability to kind of break down the recipes in their head and dovetail them and order them correctly. And this seemed like a fair challenge to me, especially at the very end. In a way, a lot of them just seemed ridiculous. Like a lot of them were just like, no one's ever heard of this. And like, why would they be expected to know how to do that? Or nobody does this anymore. Like, we have invented baking powder or whatever, right?
I think that the thing that felt unfair to me in the technical was that they only get 2 hours to do it. And that's such a tight timeline to do it. Obviously doable because they pulled it together.
Except for Richard's jam. Sorry, Richard.
Yeah. It does also feel... And it's funny because that was the first thing he put on. But it does feel kind of funny. Like, there are only 3 of them left. And so there would be extra ovens if it was allowed. But they're not allowed to use extra ovens. If someone asked me to bake 18 things at the same time, I'd be like, can I use your house too?
I'm interested in that aspect of the tent, right? I feel like they take away whole stations. So how are those stations, like how does the wiring and the, like how does that all work? How are you breaking down these giant kitchen benches every time, I guess?
Good question.
Your bio kind of answered this, Emily, but do you bake at all? Like what is your relationship to baking?
I would say I am a sporadic baker. I am not fairly very intentional. I'm the, oh, I want to eat X item, so I should go try it. And it's partly because my mom is a fairly prolific baker and is actually quite known in our hometown. She has a molasses brown bread recipe that she makes every Saturday and posts on Facebook, and friends come over and pick up a loaf. And so I just never was interested. Oh. That was really her domain, and she was quite good at it. And so now 60% of my bakes are only moderately successful. I have tried risen dough twice and made small hockey pucks with raisins in them. And so I don't mind it on a day where I have time to fail. It's okay. But there are some days where I don't feel like having failure. And so baking's not the right activity for that day. But I like a good banana bread. My chocolate chip cookies are like fairly reliable. And I made my very first chocolate cake this year. And people ate it. So I thought that was a pretty good sign that it went well. But yes, I would say I'm on the learning side and just the like sort of wanders into it and gets in over her head style of baker.
I think that the motivation of baking being that you want to eat the thing that you're going to bake is a perfect motivation. The best motivation.
I get being like, I don't want to have a failure today as a thing. I think that's what a lot of people like about Wordle, actually, is that it's like you get a little win at the beginning of the day before you have to do anything else.
And why people get so upset and Wordle X out of six trends. Yes. All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Emily. I hope you got to use some of the fastidious notes that you took while doing the rewatch to do this.
I'm sure this will come up so much in my everyday life. It will serve me very well.
So moving on to the showstopper, this is their last ever challenge. And they have to do a pièce montée, which has an accent grave and then also an accent aigu in it. It's very...
They're like angry eyebrows across the whole turn.
Yeah. It conventionally consists, Sue tells us, of cake, sugar work, choux, and petit four. And they can include any kind of those they like. Paul and Mary want them to make a creation out of this, some kind of creation. Gotta be spectacular and tastes incredible, and they've got 5 hours to do it, which we've talked about this duration before, but 5 hours is a long ass time to just be making something.
Basically everyone does a sponge base and then a croquembouche of some kind, and then a whole bunch of shoe balls, like in some kind of structure. And then like some kind of biscuit and then some kind of petit four-ish decoration.
Yeah.
So going into this, they point out that Richard is doing very poorly. And basically it's like Richard would need to do something magnificent to pull it out of the bag, where Louis and Nancy are kind of close. I really like this challenge because all of them do pretty well. It is startling to learn very quickly that Nancy and Richard are both making windmills.
Yeah.
And Richard is making like a personally significant windmill, like the mill, like he's from Mill Hill. And then Nancy is just making the Moulin Rouge. Like she's just making a big iconic windmill. Aesthetically, they make extremely different choices though. Like Richard's is kind of a childish windmill scene with very bright primary colors. And his windmill is like made out of brittle. And Paul later says the problem is moisture that makes it so bendy. But it actually looks like if the windmill was in a windstorm and like the blades got bent backward, you know, like in a cartoon. Whereas Nancy has gone with kind of it's the Moulin Rouge. So hers is like more burlesque, sort of fun, red and black,
and
dramatic. Mm-hmm. She uses like red sugar work to make the windmill blades. And it actually turns the way she's attached it. You can spin it. And it's also huge. Hers is huge. Richard made like a little scene and she made like a very wide and tall sculptural piece, which is like very different and like a lot more adult and like professional and impressive looking.
The thing that I find the most impressive about Nancy's is that her windmill breaks at the last minute and she manages to somehow get it back together in order for it to turn. And to this day, I have absolutely no clue how she did it. All the power to her for figuring that out, because I probably would have just cried at that point. The one that is my favorite aesthetically, that I think is the cleanest and the best, is actually Lewis's. He does a mill, I mean, he does a sort of, he does something called, he calls it the village where I live. He makes a mining wheel. His shoe he makes into a rope of shoe that goes like up and over the wheel. And it looks so cool. His breaks at the last second too, and he manages to sort of stick it back together. But it's very striking. It's very neat. It's very clean. I think that flavor-wise, I probably would go for Nancy's, and her cake was tastier. But Lewis's would be the one I'd be drawn to most visually.
That's interesting. I would have been drawn to Nancy's visually. I think Louis, like, the individual components are the most neat. Like, his lettering is very clear. He outlines the mining wheel in white icing in a way that, like, draws the contrast really nicely.
Yeah.
But the overall thing is just not as big or impressive, sort of, to me, fundamentally. Like, I feel like when I see it, it looks like a bake. You know what I mean? Like that's what I think of, is it looks like, oh, look at that nice thing that got baked, and it's like a centerpiece, sort of. I feel like Nancy's, it takes me a second to register that it's food in a good way. Like, it's so sculptural. Mm. It's weird to say this as a positive, but it like doesn't look as appetizing. But I mean that in a good way. Like, it looks like an art piece in a way that is exciting to me, and I feel like Louis looks more like food. Right? And in a way that is, like, recognizable and familiar, I guess.
I'm okay with that. I think that Nancy's, the redness of the fondant she uses on her cake base is, like, way too intense for me. And actually, black and red in general, there's something, like, very, like, visceral about that color combination that I don't like on, like, a fundamental level. Mm. Now, I wouldn't, like, take marks off if I was, like, judging, because it's just my, you know, personal reaction, but it's not when I think about, like, oh, what am I going to eat? It absolutely would not have been Nancy's. I would have been drawn to Louis's. I guess we should say he makes, like, mint macarons. He makes his mining wheel out of biscuit. And Nancy, Paul calls them profiteroles, but they're shoe bun. I don't really understand where profiteroles came from as a word, but
her petit four were like shortbread cookies, where Louis were macarons, right? And that's just so much more effort. Also, okay, going back to, like, our naked cake discussion, her shortbreads spread a little bit and they lose their shape, so she stamps them out after they're baked, which seems like a really bad idea to me for exactly the complaint I had about the naked cakes. Like, I feel like it looks really messy. You can see, like, the crumbly edge. Yeah, shortbreads are less impressive to me than macarons. End of story.
They totally are. I think that they're a safer bet. Mm-hmm. Both Richard and Louis do macarons for this challenge, which I guess if you have 5 hours, it's not the end of the world. But macarons are tough. I don't know if I'd make that gamble. Like you and Emily were saying, like, some days you just don't want the possibility of a fail. And I feel like a failed macaron while you are fulfilling a 5-hour hard-ass challenge is a bit of a recipe for disaster, but also people want to push themselves. We haven't said what a croquembouche is, but probably everyone who's listening knows, but also maybe not. It's when you make that, like, shoe bun Christmas tree looking thing that you then drizzle with, like, caramel to get it to stick together. Mm-hmm. Have you ever made you've made a lot of shoe buns. Have you ever made a croquembouche?
No. I don't like the hard texture of a croquembouche myself. Even, like, a professional one, I don't like. So I'm never going to put that effort in myself.
No, same. I like soft caramel. I don't like hard caramel. But maybe someday for this show, I'll make a croquembouche.
I'm a little curious about it. I think it would be fun, or it would, like, look cool, but I don't find it very fun to eat. And shoe is a lot of effort for it to not be fun to eat at the end.
Yeah. I mostly like things that are fun to eat.
Mm-hmm.
This was a season where I felt like the saddest to see people go, and where I was really surprised by the result, not after watching the episode. But I was surprised. It could have been anyone really going into this.
Mm-hmm. I would say even going back further. I would say, you know, at week 7 or 6, like, any of those people could have won. You know, Chetna could have won. Kate could have won. Like, Kate went, like, ages ago and she could have won. Yeah. You know, like, that's how close and how skilled this group felt.
That's what I meant, 100%. And I think Kate would be a good cutoff. Because it was fine that Norman went. It was fine that Jordan went. It was, you know, there were some people where it was like, all right.
Ian, Diana, the whole,
yeah. We sort of, like, got the chaff away from the wheat, like, real quick on this season, which makes it, like, kind of, like, edge of your seat watching and people to go do really cool stuff. But it also just feels, like, sadder in a way.
I had one last thought about the home life segments. So Nancy's husband mentions that anything Nancy does, she sort of sees through the end, you know, like, she does it to, like, she gets really good at it. And he mentions, like, that she was like, I'm kind of interested in training the dog, and then ended up, like, going to Crufts, right? Like, going to, like, the biggest dog show in the world, you know? And I can see that about her. And I was just thinking about how, like, there's so many books written about people like Nancy, you know, and so many like YouTube videos made about people like Nancy, and where people who aren't like Nancy, like me, like we're really desperate to know where that drive comes from and if it's possible to become a person like that or if it's just a way they intrinsically are. And I think are really tempted by this kind of book or YouTube video that offers sort of a cheap solution, like that says like, oh, Nancy's are like that because they wake up at 5 and take cold showers, you know? Like, okay, I can wake up at 5 and take a cold shower, but it's not going to turn you into that person. I was like wondering what you thought about that. Is it like an intrinsic quality of some people, or is it something in their upbringing, or is it like something one can cultivate?
I think it's probably a blend of all of that stuff. It's important from the get-go to be able to identify what makes something the best. That might be like the most important quality. And I feel like if you're going to do it in a bunch of different areas, it's nice if that's like a little bit intrinsic. Otherwise, it takes you like a long time to get to that area. And then the second part is being able to like get yourself to a point where you're like matching up to what you're envisioning in your head as being the best. And that part is the part where, you know, it's going to take some people not as much time, and other people it's going to take decades of their life. I'm not a Nancy. Like, I like the challenge of learning something new, and as soon as I've got it like halfway mastered, I'm on to the next. So the only things I can stay with are things that where it feels like it might be like a lifelong challenge to try to get to the point where what I'm doing might match up to what I can see in my head. Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's part of the reason I wanted to be a writer and an editor. It seems like it's enjoyable for Nancy. And sometimes I feel like the people who watch the YouTube videos, they want the end result, but you shouldn't just want the end result. You should enjoy the process of getting there, because if not, why bother? You live one time. We have to do a lot of stuff that's not enjoyable, right? Like, most of us have to work every day. Even if we like our jobs, we'd probably prefer to be retired. So then why dedicate that many hours? Or why wake up at 5 and have a cold shower? Is there anyone else who is a Nancy this season?
I would guess Martha, just because she's 17 and so good at this. Well, but I don't know, because I feel like we don't know enough about everyone, right? Like, obviously they're all extraordinary at baking, but I think it is more common to be like very good at one thing, you know? Like if it was like Martha is really good at baking and baking is going to be her thing, you know, like for her whole life. I feel like we were introduced to this idea that Nancy is just like, just determined to be like really good at whatever she does. And that's like a different quality that I think there's like a whole industry around trying to turn you into a Nancy. And maybe it is or isn't possible.
I think it is also probably maybe a little bit of a reaction to like things being systemically very difficult or structurally very difficult. And so it's appealing in one way to think like, well, there's a personal solution to this problem and it's just to be the best. Like, you know, it would solve things is determination. Mm-hmm. Well, we are going over time, so. Mm-hmm.
This has been The Rough Puffs. Your hosts are Andrea Bennett and Kim Fu. You can find us on Twitter at Rough Puffs or on Instagram at The Rough Puffs, where, you know, Andrea posts recipes and photos of their bakes and all kinds of fun stuff. We also both write books. Andrea's most recent is an essay collection called Like a Boy But Not a Boy, and my most recent is a story collection called Lesser Known Monsters of the 21st Century.
We are going to skip seasons 6 and 7 because they're not available in the US and go straight to season 8 that we will watch next. But we will have a palate cleanser to check out on a show that hopefully you will enjoy. I normally say something negative about the two bakers who lost, but I didn't tonight because they both did great. So congrats to Nancy, whose pastry was fancy. That's it. That's my last pun for the season. It's not a pun. It's just rhyming.